Hello, folks, and welcome to the fifth episode of Room Techers. Last week, we got you guys the episode a little early in the week. I know Mickey had to leave town. We're bringing it to you this time a little late due to the holiday here in the States. Abroad, we've actually got a little surprise for you. Joining us today, we have Elliot Holman, who works as a radio show host for Total Access in the UK, as well as being one of the writers and curators for the MLS UK show for Major League Soccer.
Hey, guys.
Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us here. Thanks for coming on the show, taking the time to be here with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so we're just gonna dive into this. I've read a lot of your things that you do. Tell us a little bit about what the MLS UK show is, and you know what you're doing for them.
Okay, so I started MLS UK with my friend Henry because of the perception of the league in the UK. It's awful, and I really do think it's so wrong. Years ago, it was judged for having poor standards. It was, struggling for teams. Its reputation wasn't good. And we all know that's changed, but I think the perception overseas is that it hasn't. And so I think it's important that we raise a little bit of awareness for Major League Soccer, because actually, I think, you guys have got a lot to be proud of over there.
Being in the UK, how did you really start paying attention to the MLS? Because as you said, the perception is pretty bad. The quality's obviously improved, but what kind of caught your eye about it?
I think in terms of myself, certainly, I went over on holiday to Orlando and started to spend a lot of time in Florida, and I kind of heard this buzz that they were getting this new team. And of course, at this point, I don't know a lot about MLS and soccer in America in general, but I just started to sort of follow them and see their journey from USL to becoming a fully fledged MLS team. And I think, like most people in Orlando, it really, really sort of took hold of me. And there's something really special going on there. I don't know how many people listening to this have kind of been to Orlando and understand how that whole sort of team came about, but it's something really, really special, and certainly something that everybody in the city takes an interest in, whether they're soccer fans or not. And of course, once I went along to a game, wow, I really, really got an understanding of what this is about. And it was a wake-up call. I was like, wow, people in the UK need to start paying attention to this.
And it's funny. Go ahead.
And, right now, even in my head, I'm kind of losing track of a timeline for Orlando. So has this been probably the last 5 years you visited Orlando, and then they're still in the USL and they've come up along then?
So in 2014, I first visited, and it had already been announced that they were going to join MLS. And from that moment on, it was just like a whirlwind. Anybody who even vaguely followed the club will understand it just accelerated to a level that I don't think anyone predicted. And of course, things such as the Pulse shooting, which of course was tragic, has actually almost created a really, really special story, for the club and the community where the new stadium is coming together. And once you visit that, it's really, really hard to not show an interest and kind of get hooked on what's going on there.
It's an interesting dynamic, thinking about it. For me, I live down over in Pittsburgh, and we have a USL team who's not very good. The Riverhounds aren't the greatest team. They're not a great run organization. And there are a number of other teams that we have here, other sports teams like football and baseball, and hockey. So it's funny to see and hear you talk about how the culture, like that culture, is sort of integrated into the city with Orlando, how they kind of came up and created this atmosphere. Like we see the same thing with like Atlanta United now, where they have so many fans coming to their games and stuff like that. And then excuse me, for another smaller city like Pittsburgh, where you have a USL team here, it's I've been to two of their games, and they're also very intense, super passionate fans. It's pretty awesome to watch. But you have such a I guess a lack of passion for people who don't necessarily see it as important to care about. And it's but it's cool to see, especially just hearing from what you just said about Orlando, where it's been awesome in terms of like the city coming around a team.
Yeah, Atlanta for me, I mean, you know, all right, so I started to follow Orlando, but you know, my passion is for the league as a whole. Of course I follow Orlando, but you know, that doesn't mean that I have anything against Atlanta. I mean, what has gone on there is absolutely incredible. It would be incredible whether it was over here in the Premier League or, you know, over in the States. It's really, really incredible. And I almost feel as if, you know, anybody who's seen the Orlando fans, seen, you know, that wall in the new stadium, seen how the city feels about soccer, what Atlanta have done is what the people of Orlando deserved. And I think, you know, that's something that Orlando as a club really need to think about. And they really need to, you know, you want to talk about Kaká leaving and retiring. That's a lot of money freed up and they need to spend that wisely, because Orlando deserves what Atlanta have done. You know, they deserve to be that big. And you know, full props to Atlanta, because it's really, really special.
How do you think that they should go about that? I mean, so that designated money that was just going to Kaká, do you think that they should split that up amongst trying to build depth in their squad? I know that they just finished at the bottom of the table, so they're going to have much higher draft picks. Do you think it's going to be a quick turnaround for Orlando?
I hope so, because you're going into, you know, you're talking 3 years, no playoffs. I think it's time now. It's time that Kaká did a lot for the club, and there's a lot of people in Orlando that don't believe in Kaká, and they can't see his value. And I think even if he never set foot on that pitch, he had a lot of value for the club, and he earned every penny. He embodied everything that they were trying to create. But I think you're right. Squad depth is so, so big in MLS now, especially with the long away trips. Toronto have proved, I mean, look at their squad. The squad depth is incredible. You know, that's exactly what needs to happen. You know, spread it out, get some talent in all areas, and really put that money to use, because it's great having one incredible player. I mean, Kaká was on the same money as David Villa. David Villa is doing a lot more for NYC. You know, we can all be honest about that. So I think, you know, split it up. We need depth. We need quality in all areas of the field, especially midfield. I think Orlando are very weak in midfield, maybe even more so than defence. I know a lot of people pick holes in the Orlando defence, but midfield for me, the ball retention is absolutely atrocious. And I think that's where money needs to be spent very, very wisely.
And then you have, looking at Atlanta as sort of this poster, like this stereotypical what you should be doing as a expansion team. Minnesota also coming in at the same time as Atlanta, and they did the complete opposite. I mean, what went wrong in Minnesota compared to what Atlanta did so well?
Minnesota is a difficult one, especially from, you know, people like us who are looking and trying to kind of put a finger on what exactly went wrong. I mean, we all know how quickly the league can be turned on its head. I think the three of us would probably agree that Galaxy aren't going to be down there next season. You know, we've all seen how quickly things can change in MLS with draft picks and so on and so forth. But, you know, there's no reason why Minnesota couldn't have a better season next year. But, you know, comparing them to Atlanta, it's, well, you can't, can you?
It's a bit unfair. I mean, just even thinking about it right now.
I mean, Atlanta, even just the stadium alone, regardless of any performance on the pitch, you would say, wow, yeah, Atlanta have done better. So I think, you know, things are going to take time, like they have in Orlando, for example. For Minnesota, they've got the new digs on the way. Let's see what happens there. Let's see who they can bring in the draft, see where they can maybe spend some money, move some things around. And I hope they stick, you know, I hope they stick with the coach. I hope they give it time, because that doesn't happen enough in soccer these days, whether it's in the UK or in America. You know, give them time, let them bed in, let these players get experience and see what can happen.
Well, it's funny from an American's perspective. When I look at the MLS, I mean, I've grown up around soccer my entire life, ever since I could walk. My dad played in Germany when I was younger, and it's been part of my life since I was born. And it's funny to see in America where I know more people. I don't know too many people around my age. We're in our low 20s. I don't know too many people who are big fans of the MLS. I know everyone defaults to, you know, look at the Prem because it's the highest level you can, arguably the highest level you can watch. You can be a fan of Chelsea or Liverpool or Manchester's. It's a lot higher quality soccer. So you kind of just brush it to the side when you think, oh, the MLS isn't as good. So I guess I'll just watch this because this is the highest level I can. Yeah,
I mean, having been over, I've been over to the States twice this year, and I've seen the coverage. You know, the coverage of the Premier League is just as big as MLS. So I can see why that's an issue. But if I'm really really honest with you, I know we're going to talk about some Premier League stuff shortly. But I live here. I have it on my TV 24/7. You know, it's available 24/7 at home. But I watch so much more MLS. It's just more exciting.
Why do you think that? There's a lot more parity in the MLS. Do you enjoy the style of play more? I know that when I'm watching the MLS, it definitely feels like they let the game flow, and there's a lot less ref involvement. It's usually the players getting the things done on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. My sister, she's a lot older than me. She's been a Manchester City fan for a long, long, long time, ever since she went there for university or college, as you guys say. And I think she's been watching for so long, and she's seen them, you know, at the lowest of the lows. But she's actually given up her season ticket. She doesn't go anymore because if they go 1-0 down or they're not 2-0 up at half time, the fans are getting on their back. You know, it's as if they've just been relegated, and for me, that's not okay. You know, soccer is there to be enjoyed by everybody. You're gonna win, you're gonna lose. You know, I mean, I'm a Norwich City fan. I know all about that, and with Orlando as well, I'm well aware of. You know, you lose a lot more than you win, but you know, for me, the idea of leaving at half time because you're 1-0 down because you're Man City is not something that I want to be a part of. You know, I really, really think that recently has been what's pushed me a lot more towards MLS. Anyone can beat anybody, kind of similar to the Championship here in the UK. It's, you know, I don't feel, apart from big name players and ridiculous amounts of money being spent, I don't see anymore the attraction of the Premier League. And I would include, you know, my team, Norwich. You know, we get promoted every now and again, and we just can't compete. There's no point. Mm-hmm. You cannot go up and compete without spending hundreds of millions of pounds. And, you know, is that fun for people? I don't know.
So just talking about kind of the atmosphere that you mentioned, I mean, just being on Twitter and interacting with British soccer people, that seems like it's a big complaint that's been coming up and building for maybe the last decade about how the stadiums aren't the same, the fans aren't the same. Is that what you see there? And what do you think? Is it really just the money, prices of tickets going up that's changing? I mean, what do you think?
I think it's expectation. So if you're a Man City fan, if you're a Man United fan, you turn up, and there's a very small percentage of fans that have been there from day one, compared to obviously the new capacity of the stadium. And I think people just go there and they expect to see entertaining football. They expect a win. And maybe that is because they've paid an absolute fortune. And so it's cat and mouse, really. But, you know, I, having been to MLS games, I mean, whether it's Orlando, whether it's Atlanta packing out, you know, breaking records every single week now with attendance, whether it's Portland, you know, an incredible TIFO, you know, at Providence Park. There's something really, really special about MLS fans. And when people talk about, you know, MLS needing to get better and needing to be bigger and needing to spend more, and I like it how it is. Do you know what I mean? If it's going to turn into the Premier League, take it from me. You don't want that.
That's interesting. That's interesting to hear, actually. And then you going up, just as you said, anyone could beat anyone. Even just looking at the playoffs that we're seeing right now for the MLS.
Yeah.
Like Atlanta making it in their first season, Columbus being the fifth seed, knocking them off, and then beating New York City and taking on Toronto right now. It's pretty impressive to see even from, I mean, we're huge fans of, like, in the, over here, I know that a lot of times we're huge fans of brackets, seeding, all that kind of jazz for tournaments and stuff. So it's easy. It's cool to see a lower seed, you know, do well in one of these tournaments. And then going off of what you just said, you hear that and you're like, oh, like, that's pretty awesome. Like, why are we not watching this? Because you can see any team beat anyone on any given day.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, MLS would love to turn it into something like the Premier League, because look at the money. The money in that league is absolutely ridiculous. But as a fan, you know, yeah, it's, if you're a Man City fan, it's great. You know, are you even going to lose this season? Who knows? But
it's not looking likely.
But I like going to games and thinking, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I'm going to get behind the lads. You know, if you're in the wall in Orlando, for example, you know you're going to be jumping up and down. It's not going to stop. There's going to be smoke. There's going to be water. There's going to be chanting. And, you know, you're going to have an incredible time. And I just think it, when the more money gets involved, whether the supporters are paying more money or the clubs are spending more money on players and stadiums, the expectation gets so much that it almost ruins it. And, you know, like you say, Atlanta, they came in, they set up shop, they moved into a new stadium halfway through, and they absolutely smashed it. They made the playoffs, and they've got a brand already. Their brand is, we attack, and you should be absolutely petrified of us. Even when you've got a corner, you need to be petrified of us, because we are coming straight at you if you don't get this corner right. And, you know, ultimately, that's what killed them in the playoffs against Columbus. It was the defending. But I like that. They've just tried and to go for it. And we need more of that. Look at United in the Premier League. They'll sit back and try and defend the league.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, United, Liverpool, for example, it's billed over here. I was actually in the States for that game, and it was billed over there. It was going to be this huge thing. 0-0. I mean,
yeah, what a snooze fest.
Really?
Well, Brennan here is a pretty big Liverpool fan. We've had a number of conversations about Manchester United and how they play against the bigger clubs, and how boring and how much of a turnoff it is. Honestly, you see that and you're like, well, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to see that. I'd rather see something like you're describing right now. Like, I'd rather see an MLS game where it's, yeah, we're not the best. We may not have the highest quality players on our team. We may not have the most money, but, like, you'll be damn sure if we're going to, you know, cheer just as loud and be just as passionate no matter what.
Yeah, I completely understand that, you know, the Premier League, La Liga as well, when you've got Messi and Ronaldo, I completely understand that people want to see the best players. And that's, you know, that's completely fine. And it sounds like I'm, you know, bashing the Premier League, and I'm not, because we all know it's the best league in the world. But, you know, I'm just saying there's a lot to be said for Major League Soccer, and especially over here, it's not being said at all. No one is standing up and saying, do you know what? I really like MLS. People will laugh at you, and it needs to change, and that's the mission.
So if you're talking about the development and moving forward with the MLS, I know we're having the U.S. Soccer Federation presidential elections are coming up, and then one of the topics everyone keeps talking about is the pro relegation. What's your opinion on that? Having relegation promotion in the MLS, do you think that would just kind of ruin it, as akin to what the Premier League is?
Can I be really honest with you? Until the last few weeks of the season, I wasn't sure where I stood on this, and that's genuinely true. I wanted to kind of step back and think, right, okay, so how would this work? And having sort of read into a few different, you know, views, I still wasn't sure. But I went to Orlando v Columbus at the end of the season. Now, Columbus were in playoffs. Orlando had absolutely nothing to play for whatsoever. And that, for me, right there, was a perfect example of why we need relegation. Orlando had nothing to play for whatsoever. And boy, could you tell they had nothing to play for whatsoever. If they were playing to save their MLS status or MLS Premier or whatever it's going to be, you know, it would have been so much different. You know, they were sitting back. It was Kaká's last home game, and they were just trying to set him up to score a goal. And, you know, this is a professional game, and it seemed like a friendly or a testimonial match.
We've had a few discussions about relegation in the MLS, and it's funny because I think one of the biggest things that stops it is just money. bigger, these teams that are in the MLS now, like Orlando, you wonder how much money they lose getting relegated versus getting promoted. And then, I don't know, it's a weird beast to try and uncover and kind of wrap your head around an opinion, I guess.
It's not as simple as me saying, well, it should be relegation. I know that, but
right.
Of course, the shoe on the other foot is LA Galaxy, the pin-up boys. Look at the state of them. I mean, you know, they would be relegated, and could the league take that? Could they afford to lose LA Galaxy from MLS when we're talking about being as big as the Premier League? You know, the Premier League need United and they need City. Does MLS need LA Galaxy? Is that, you know, would that ruin things?
I mean, on the flip side, right. though, other, I mean, you've seen Atletico Madrid get relegated in Spain. You've seen clubs like Newcastle be relegated in England. I mean, sometimes that just needs to happen. It's in the American system, you do kind of have the benefit of, all right, you can have one down year, you can rebuild through the draft, and we'll have another go at it. But it's not the end of the world, really. And you've seen when I remember, like, Torres' last year at Atletico Madrid, they were trying to do, like, their 1 year in hell. They didn't come back up. Newcastle has been bobbing up and down for as long as I can remember in the Premier League. So I guess it really depends on what product is coming up when something like that goes down. If a team, I think Cincinnati is being tossed around as an expansion. If the team that comes up, if they can produce and really get their fan base involved, then the fans out in LA can take a year to kind of think about what it's like to not have a team around them.
Yeah, and I actually feel sorry for, you know, the LA fans, because they've still, and this is the difference, okay? So they've still been there in their section, they've still been living it, breathing it, they staged the protest, you know, they're wearing their hearts on their sleeves. And again, that's something that tends not to happen so much over here. It would just be, right, well, this isn't good enough, I'm not coming anymore. Sunderland have been relegated. True. Their fans are leaving after 20 minutes, you know, they're not turning up in the first place. I don't believe that would happen at a team, you know, like Galaxy. Maybe the attendances wouldn't quite be there, but I think they've got a real core group of fans. And there's a lot of teams that we talk about for expansion that would actually just make up a really neat, you know, league underneath MLS to kick off with. There's a lot of passionate cities all across America and Canada that really want in. And as far as I can see, if we're really going to simplify it, MLS want to make a fortune and they want to charge people to join the league. And so they're not just going to make another one and give it to them for free.
Yeah, that's a damn shame too. Well, I'm looking at now, 22 teams, so 18 for two divisions if we're going off the British model, even though I know that the championship has closer to 30, I want to say. So,
yeah, 24 in the championship.
We're looking at probably a while before we can really field two legit divisions in the States and Canada combined.
Yeah, and then you have to figure out exactly how many expansion teams you need. Like, how many do you – how do you go about it? Do you go about it as, let's take a USL team who is doing really well, like a team like FC Cincinnati who pulls in, like, a ton of fans every single time. They have a great following, but they're just not in the MLS, and that's kind of what they need. Should it just be a matter of bringing them up to, like, a second division, or should it be a matter of expanding to bigger cities and having the team just built straight into the MLS?
Yeah, I mean, how many teams do we add into MLS before we split them? I mean, it's going to be crazy. The year before, surely, there's going to be a lot of teams.
Right. I think it's pretty – it's the more I like I said, I had ignored the MLS like a lot of people in America do. Not as many as I thought, but even just listening to what you're saying right now kind of changed my opinion on it. But I mean, we watch a decent amount of the playoffs, at least. We have, like, two good legs coming up right now, Western and Eastern Conference Finals. But you will be talking more about the MLS on a podcast for MLS UK show. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're gonna kick this off after the finals, because it kind of seemed weird to just jump in at this point. We may as well let it all let the dust settle before we crack on with a series of podcasts. But it's just going to be me as a Norwich City fan and my friend Henry as a Bolton Wanderers fan. As you can understand, neither of us are particularly satisfied with the current state of soccer. You know, I mean, Bolton have got problems off the field as well. So Henry's adopted Atlanta. I've adopted Orlando, but it's not just about those two teams. It's the league as a whole, and trying to kind of give our views and our opinions, should people care. You know, I think a lot of people are interested to see what the perception is of people here in the UK, and we'll give it to them.
Yeah, that was very what caught our attention, looking at your profile and sort of what you do, thinking about the MLS from a UK perspective, as ironic as it is for us to give takes about the Premier League from an American perspective.
Yeah, I mean, as fans of, well, this is what I'm interested in. I mean, you watch a lot of English football. As fans of MLS soccer, where do you kind of place the standard? Would you say Championship?
That's what I would say Championship. I don't think it's lower.
Well,
that's a.
When I've been coming home the last few times over holidays, my dad's a bit broken from Liverpool. He's kind of given up on them, pretty much. So he's been watching a lot of Championship soccer he's been watching a lot of Sheffield Wednesday. For some reason, he's latched onto them, and the games have been really, I mean, they've been competitive and almost raw. And I think that's kind of the best way that I describe MLS games that I see. There's a lot of flashes of talent. It's really physical and fast paced. And they're fun to watch. So, I mean, I could see, I don't know, how many teams do you think could in the MLS could stay up after a year of promotion to the Premier League?
This is it. I mean, the Championship is very, very physical. A lot of Premier League teams come down and they struggle because they just don't have that fight. They're all about, you know, tippy-tappy, tick-a-tacka. You know, they don't want to fight for balls. They don't want to slide in for 50-50s. And I think it's a really good question. Well, you know, let's take Atlanta. Does that style of football, would they be able to stay up? Could that defense afford to leak 2-3 goals a game if Miggy and Joseph are going to smash in 5 at the other end? You know, maybe.
Yeah, and they're also those teams that they catch neutrals' eyes, they end up having a casual following, and then like the end of the season comes around and you have fans of other teams pulling for them to stick around and be like, oh, maybe they just need one more transfer window to really shore up the back line, or they just need a number 6 to kind of clean things up and give their defense a break.
Yeah, and I think as a fan of a few clubs, I know that everybody always thinks, oh, we just need this or we just need that. And of course, when you get that, oh, we just need this. You know, there's teams in MLS that need a lot of work. Atlanta, you know, they just need to shore up the back line, and they will do just fine next season as long as they hold on to their core group. In the Championship, there's a big changeover of players. You know, Norwich City, my lads, for example, have made over 10 new signings in the summer, new manager, and guess what? It's done nothing because they need to gel. So I think it's just as much about keeping your squad together as it is just keep adding players and adding players.
Yeah, it's funny. We talk especially to Mickey about the Liverpool team that he has, very akin to Atlanta now, where it's, they have great attacking prowess but not so much in the defense.
Yeah, it's the Mo Salah versus the Moreno, you know, nothing at the back, mm-hmm. but all good going forward.
Yeah, 3 steps forward, hopefully just 2 steps back, but it might actually be 4. And also just loyalty to players, where it's like, I don't know if you'd really be up to snuff, you kind of become a fan favorite or a manager favorite, so you're sticking around a little longer than you should. But I really don't envy the managers and the like upper management who have to try to build a squad that's going to be competitive, because as soon as you think somebody's going to take steps forward, they'll just lose the plot. They'll have a couple of bad games, and next thing you know, you're out however much money you're paying them weekly or whatever the transfer wage is, and you're most likely looking for a new job.
Yeah, and the issue is that the manager always seems to take the fall. So, for an example, in the championship this week, you've got a team who are coming up against their old manager. Now, the old manager signed half of that squad, and he probably thought, oh yeah, I'm getting my own squad together here. I'm really starting to build something. Guess what? You lose three games, you miss out on the playoffs, and you're gone.
Oh, was this the Middlesbrough game?
You have to start again somewhere else, you know.
Oh, was this the Middlesbrough game with Gary Monk being on? I can't remember what game we were watching.
Yeah, so you've got Gary Monk, Middlesbrough, and Leeds, and also Alex Neil at Preston was up against his old Norwich side at the weekend. So you know, there's two examples there of managers that were really starting to go somewhere. Gary Monk at Leeds, especially, I think. You know, Leeds were in a dark, dark place, and they really, you know. Gary Monk really, really did some excellent work, and then, you know, guess what? You're out.
Yeah.
I noticed the competition for this is just a complete opinion. Looking at the Premier League and the Championship, and most of the what you consider the bigger and better leagues over in Europe compared to the United States, it seems like the turnover for a head coach is a lot more. Happens way more often, and is a lot more pressure than it is in the MLS. Is that true, or is that just I just don't know enough about the MLS?
I would agree with that. I think again, it's probably to do with the amount of money that's being spent. I know I keep coming back to this, but you know, if you're a top 10 side in the Premier League, you're spending a lot of money on your manager, and you're spending even more money on the players he's telling you to bring in. Now, if that doesn't work, you've got a really difficult decision to make. Do you stick with that, or do you try? And it is try, and it is totally a lottery to bring somebody else in to work with those new players that have just been brought into a club. Now, obviously, in MLS, there isn't that huge amount of money for the majority of sides, but you know, there still seems to be a little bit more of a merry-go-round for the managers in MLS this year than there ever has been. And that's been quite interesting. Maybe there's a bit of European culture creeping in there.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, AC Milan just fired their coach Vincenzo Montella after he brought in, 10, 12 players, a whole new starting lineup. And they're not doing so hot right now. I think they're sitting 7th or 8th place right now in Serie A.
That's not considered doing too hot. I mean, I believe that's still a European spot in Italy. I don't know. That just seems incredibly unfair.
Yeah, and it's all, like I say, it's always going to be a risk. So everybody's under pressure, whether you're on sitting in the front office of the club in MLS, or you're on the board, or you're a director of AC Milan. You've brought that person in and they're not performing, so you know full well you've got to change it, otherwise you're going to be the one that's out of a job. So it's a dog-eat-dog world, and there's no guarantee that AC Milan are now going to be better off, you know, just because they've changed the manager, because they're now left with all these players that, you know, thought they were going to be working under one manager, and actually, you know, he's gone already.
Yeah, exactly. If there's anything they wanted to change, or the direction they just went was just completely undone, so they got to restart again. That's got to be brutal for players too, especially a newer player who comes in and a completely different system and a whole new coach, a whole new league, everything, and then your coach leaves like 4 months later.
Yeah, and I think this is why it's really important. I mean, we talk about MLS. You've got a lot of managerial changes. Obviously, with Brad coming in at New England, whether it's Remy coming in at Montreal, managers, clubs are making changes before the draft, before the preseason starts, and that is when you do your work and you pray that it all comes together, you know, in that first week of the season, come February, come March, in MLS. I don't know if there's, you know, is there much advantage in Major League Soccer? Maybe you guys know better than me. in changing your manager mid-season. Is that going to help?
It really, it seems like it's such a toss-up, kind of, as in any sport. I mean, sometimes you change and it's a shake-up, and now the locker room woke up and now they're finally performing. And then other times it's just more of the same, and there's really not much to it.
I think I'd be interested as well to see, take somebody like Patrick Vieira. Is he doing all of his own coaching? Is he hands-on? Is Jason Kreiss hands-on at Orlando? Are they sitting back? Are they telling their coaches what they want to achieve on the training field? Because you can change the manager if he's just picking the team and he's not the one on the training field who's putting that work in and getting those players working on shape, working on defending, working on counter-attacks, Atlanta. Is changing the manager going to help if he's not the one on the training field?
And then that kind of comes down to the responsibility of, well, who's selecting the coaching staff? Is there really a vision that you as an organization have? I mean, is your practice squad playing the same way that you're that your match day 2018 are playing? And I don't know. It seems like there is a lot of behind the scenes stuff that the manager really only takes the blame for. And I don't know.
I know that in the MLS now, even growing up playing in the United States, talking like from a developmental standpoint, you're having obviously a lot more foreign players who are younger coming to the MLS. Before, it was if a player who used to play in Europe came to the MLS, he was 34 years old already. now they're starting to come over because the quality of the league has improved. Excuse me.
It has, and we can see that the age of the DPs in MLS is dropping as well, which is really good to see. With Kaká and Pirlo retiring, I can't see that we're ever going to have players of that age playing in teams such as NYC again. You know, mainly because I don't believe that Kaká and Pirlo really worked out ever for the teams. But also, I'm interested in the likes of Jack Harrison coming over from England. You've got Anton Walkes, who's at Atlanta from Tottenham Hotspur. It's really good to see that's happening. And I think that needs to happen more and more and more so that people over here, like I keep saying, will actually take note of it. And I include clubs in that as well. It's not just fans that are sort of being a bit snobby about the Premier League and MLS. If you're going to send your player, whether you're David Moyes at West Ham or David Unsworth at Everton or you're Mourinho at United and you want to send a player out on loan maybe to the Championship, why not MLS if we're agreeing that it's the same level and they're going to learn just as much? You know, maybe a little bit more, maybe a bit of personal development, you know, being away, living somewhere else, you know, maybe they learn a bit of life. lesson as well, who knows, but
a little more culture.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to be, you know, that needs to be done in that. Of course, the flip side of that, I spoke to a scout in Liverpool who works at Liverpool quite recently, actually back in the summer, and he was explaining how he's actually really, really clued up on MLS. We exchanged information on a lot of players, a lot of opinions. He was a big fan of a lot of younger MLS players that some I had heard of, some I hadn't. And the main reason, of course, is work permits. They can't take players from MLS, no matter how well they're doing. You know, a Kyle Larin, for example, Leeds are very interested in Kyle Larin. I know there was interest in Fernando Addy last year from Portland. Jack Harrison, United and City interested in getting Jack Harrison back over. But it's not that simple anymore. And he was explaining how there tends to now, you almost need to stop halfway. You need to play in Belgium or somewhere like that to get the work permit to be able to play here in the UK.
Oh, wow.
So, for example, when you've got Jelle Van Damme from Galaxy going to play in Belgium. Yes, he's from Belgium, but that also opens up a whole possibility of him coming to England in the next few years.
Right.
I remember Liverpool having a struggle with this with a young Brazilian kid, and it seems like with the work permits, you almost have to prove that you have an exceptional skill. Is that kind of in the vein of what's happening with players coming from the MLS? Like, the UK just doesn't even recognize developing and playing in the MLS as something worthy of a work permit?
Yeah, as I understand it, and again, I don't profess to be an expert on this, but it's a point system, much similar to if I was to come over to the US and I wanted to work in broadcasting, for example. It's a point system based on a lot of different things, but I think you're right. Mainly, it's because MLS is not up there. It's not going to earn you a lot of points if you say, "Well, I played for Toronto and I won, or Seattle, I won the league last year, I won the MLS Cup last year." That's not going to cut it. You know, there's got to be a lot more, in there. And so I think this is again why we're talking that the MLS reputation has to improve, so that we start to see players coming and going from the UK over to the States. But interestingly, when I spoke to him as well, there's one player, and I don't know, you can probably guess this quite quickly. There's one player that he had a conversation with at Liverpool, who they put an offer down on the table. He was interested in signing, but a club in MLS came along and he turned Liverpool down to go to MLS. So, oh, no. As shocking as that is for me, do you guys have any idea who that
was
might
it
be?
Giovinco a couple of years ago?
No, but you're on the right lines. It's a big player.
Oh, it wasn't Villa, was it?
It was David Villa.
God damn it.
Wow.
So David Villa turned down Liverpool to go to NYCFC.
It's a classic Liverpool. Totally snubbed Liverpool. That's hilarious to me.
But it's fine. You've got Sturridge and he can dance. So,
yes,
you know.
He can. And Salah,
he can get hurt every week.
Stop scoring goals. So. Wow.
Yeah.
He's playing lights out though for you guys. Having David Villa would have been kind of cool for like two seasons. He probably would have been hurt less than Sturridge.
Yeah, exactly.
No promises. Not with our physios. So who knows? There was one thing I wanted to bring up about the MLS and just perception over in the UK and abroad. What are your what are the thoughts about our collegiate and our draft system? Like, is that kind of just looked down upon as, what are you guys doing? Why would you ever do that? Why aren't you developing these kids? I mean, what are your thoughts?
No, I wish they did that over here, 100%. I think it's embarrassing when you look at the amount of English players in the Premier League. I think it has to change. Tottenham are one of the only clubs that are really, really bringing through good English players. Half of the England national team is playing for Spurs, and I think we need so much more of this. And again, this is one of the big things in MLS for me, is that young players are getting a chance, they're getting experience. I mean, they're working with the likes of David Villa and Giovinco, for goodness sake. I mean, do you get much better training than that? Jack Harrison, you know, is playing up top with David Villa day in, day out in training, and then flying around Northern America playing up front in big games in MLS. I don't understand why we should get rid of that, and why, you know, clubs in the UK should not adopt that, and certainly the leagues shouldn't adopt that as well.
I was not expecting that. More. And that was that's an awesome way to look at it. That might have just,
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you guys have probably got a lot of stories where it's not worked out. But you know, I look at a Jack Harrison, Dom Dwyer. You know, he's from my Norwich, you know, my neck of the woods over here. He was told at Norwich, because he broke his muscle in his ankle or something, he was never going to play again, and he just went over to America to, you know, study whatever and become a coach, and ended up back in MLS through a draft because he played a bit of soccer in college, and it's kind of worked out all right for him. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, and then you have I know Jordan Morris was a big story I think 2 years ago now, where he was coming out of college as well. He had a fantastic run. I think he won the national championship when he was playing. I think it was Michigan State that he used to play at. I can't remember. But he had the option. He had some trials at Wolfsburg prior to the MLS draft, and they were very interested in signing him right out of college. And instead, he chose to stay with the MLS. So he chose to stay there over snub that going over to Europe. And it's pretty interesting to see how it was pretty cool to see how that story sort of developed, how he moved over to Portland. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting thing. I mean, we're trying to draw a comparison between Major League Soccer and other leagues around the world. If you're take Pulisic for example, would you rather be playing in Germany as an American? Would you rather be playing in Germany than in MLS? I don't know if I would.
I don't know. I guess. The draw for me to be in the MLS is for that experience. I don't think if I want to be, I want to see how I want to say this. If I'm a young player and people are seeing this potential in me that, you know, you could be a world-class player or a very good player down the road, from a developmental standpoint, if I look at a big team in Germany or a big team anywhere in Europe, that seems more like an end game rather than a better path to get there. Whereas if you're going to compare the Bundesliga to the MLS and you say the Bundesliga is better, then maybe starting in the Bundesliga isn't smart. But for Pulisic to go to the MLS, I mean, you get more experience in the MLS if you're a younger player, in my opinion, and you're good. They give you those opportunities, like you're saying, Jack Harrison's young player, and he gets tons of experience and appearances playing with good name players. So there's nothing wrong with that in my head. However, I mean, he's an exception and a very excellent player playing in the Bundesliga. And they do a good job with young players in general, I think, the Bundesliga. But I don't know. That's a good question.
Really, I guess it's... sorry.
I mean, and me and Matt were talking about, I think, a week or two ago about how this we're really only starting to see American players who are coming up through European systems right now, like Eriksen at Christensen at Chelsea, and then there's another defender at Tottenham. So I think we'll have to kind of take a 5 or 10 year break to see how American players develop over there and if it's better or not to kind of stay at home and develop our own style of play.
And this is again a reason why I think there needs to be a bit more of almost a tunnel between the English leagues and MLS, because actually if you're like you just said, if you're American and you're you're developing, you're going to get a lot more game time than if you're over here in England. But if you become of a level like Pulisic, for example, if only it was that easy to just jump from MLS into the English leagues, I think you'd 100% do it, even if it's just for the language barrier alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to bring this up just because we keep getting mad about it because we keep seeing things. How does the U.S. not making the World Cup affect, if it does at all, how does it affect the development of domestic soccer here?
First of all, I have to say how disappointed I was when that happened, because for every reason that I've explained so far, us wanting to big up American soccer, and I know obviously Canada is part of MLS as well, but I was actually over in the States on that fateful night in Trinidad, and it's so disappointing that has happened. MLS is at a better level than it ever has been. There's, even if you were just picking from that league alone, without the likes of Pulisic going abroad, there is enough talent in that league for America to be in the World Cup. And I can't believe that they have not made it, because it's shocking. It really is shocking. Sorry, guys.
Well, as a fan too, speaking of, if you're just talking development, if I'm a fan now, no World Cup for me next year to watch, I think you're going to see a lot of Americans just sort of tune out soccer for a number of years now.
Yeah. It's a crucial time for MLS. Because of that. We're adding teams. You know, we talk about Atlanta. They've done so much for the league, not just for Georgia. You know, other expansion teams, Minnesota. You know, that's all right. So Minnesota hasn't been such a success story, but there's still thousands of people that are going along to watch those games. They're getting a brand new stadium. Recently, we've had NYC, we've had Orlando. The national team's been playing in Orlando. It's really starting to build some momentum. And then, wow, you've not made it into the World Cup. I think it's a really crucial time for American soccer to have failed so miserably. And I think it will affect MLS. What's the protocol now? Does MLS take a break for the World Cup? What's going to happen?
Well, isn't the U.S. and Chile and some other teams who didn't, aren't there kind of discussions to have almost like a losers World Cup going on after the World Cup? I mean,
oh dear,
yeah, not great. I mean, it's just, I think that would be embarrassing and humiliating.
Wouldn't it be great to win that? Hey,
yeah, well,
yeah, right. Like you're the best loser.
I mean, and there are a decent amount of good federations that just dropped the ball this year, but. I think that the MLS has always continued through the games. They've just kind of managed without the players.
I think I'd have to be honest and say, though, that, you know, Italy, yeah, it's a surprise. There's a lot of teams that haven't made it. But when you look at the teams, it's about who you've been playing. So America have no excuse when you look at the teams that they faced. Whereas, you know, yes, Italy are an incredible side, but they've got aging players and they're playing, in my opinion, some, not all, but some better opposition than America have faced. And I really think, you know, there's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse. The US men's national team had to be in that World Cup. And, you know, when that tournament starts and, you know, you've got, I don't know, Minnesota v Colorado to look forward to instead of you know, US versus Brazil, then I think it's really going to hit home. No offense to Minnesota and Colorado, but you know, MLS should be taking a break for a World Cup that the US are taking a part in, let's be honest.
Sorry Minnesota, Brazil's a little bit better than you. No, it's true though, and I know we Brendan and myself were watching that game against Trinidad. I called off work the next day because of that loss.
Really? That bad?
It was that bad. Yeah, it was that bad. And we were watching the game, and I mean, even from watching Arena on the sidelines, like just there was no urgency in the team. They didn't seem like they wanted to be there at all. And it was disappointing as a fan to just watch that helplessly as you stare at the TV screaming at Bruce Arena to just push them forward and get a damn goal. But definitely, I mean, watching the way that they played, they definitely didn't deserve to be in the World Cup.
It might be what they
unfortunately.
Need. It might be a wake-up call to really take the search for a next head coach seriously. I don't know. I'm trying to find something to be optimistic about, but that probably won't come around until next fall.
From the outside looking in, though, I think you're right. It's the perfect time to really assess things. In the same way that Galaxy will be doing, and you know Orlando will be doing, it's the perfect time. It can't get worse, and I think you have to use it as a lesson, and you have to learn from it. And I don't know about you. I don't know how you guys feel about MLS coaches, you know, progressing to be the US men's national team coach, but I think there's a few candidates, certainly.
That would be interesting. I haven't looked in too much into that, actually. I wouldn't be opposed to that, I don't think. Especially if, I mean, I think the U.S. men's national team needs to be approached in a similar way to the way MLS teams need to be approached in terms of development and moving forward and being more of a front runner or a more Class A brand name, I guess, in people's mouths.
I just want to play.
I think...
Just a plan.
England have appointed Gareth Southgate. It's very, very split, 50-50 as to whether that was the, you know, on opinion, fans' opinion, whether that was the right decision or not. But I think it's proving that you don't have to be a huge name, you know, like Bruce Arena. You know, he's not American, but take Carl Robinson, for example. You know, he's just jumped, he's finished playing, he's jumped over and he's done an incredible job, and no one would really have A, expected it, and B, probably still doesn't even realize what he's done at Vancouver in the last, you know, the last couple of years. And to get where they got to this year, especially on, you know, the way they finished the season, you know, that's a perfect example of coaches in MLS that just get overlooked.
I think the next like few months, first of all, I thought that the way that the U.S. played in that friendly right after they had not qualified against Portugal was somewhat also promising as a U.S. fan, looking at the amount of young talent that was brought there. It definitely wasn't like our A team, and it definitely wasn't Portugal's A team or B team even. But watching that game gave us glimpses of some of the young talent that we do have. American young talent, not necessarily in the U.S., but playing for the United States. So there was some sort of consolation to myself watching a bunch of 18-year-olds play pretty well against a C team for Portugal.
Yeah, and I think, do you know what? I actually tweeted the day of that game in the morning, looking back at some of the results that the U.S. men's national team had against lesser opposition, shall we say, which had been disappointing. And when you look and think, wow, we're about to play the European champions, it didn't look like it was going to go well, but you know, full credit.
Yeah, I guess. Well, this last little questions we got for you here, this playoff we got here in the MLS Western Conference Finals, Seattle up 2-0 on the Houston Dynamo, and Toronto and Columbus Crew tied at zeros. Their games are Thursday and Wednesday of this week, I believe. Who do you think goes to the finals?
Matt?
Yep.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hey, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, I think someone just dropped.
Oh, you're good.
There. Okay.
Sorry, you went halfway through.
That's okay. We were just talking the conference championships that we have right now. Who are your picks to make it to the finals?
I'm gonna be that guy, and I'm gonna say I said Toronto all along, but I did. I actually was sort of secretly hoping that Atlanta could go all the way, because of what a story it would have been. But you can't fail to be impressed by Toronto. The talent in that first 11, and then when you look to the subs bench as well, the squad depth is huge. It's immensely impressive. And I think it has to be, you know, Toronto-Seattle final again.
The rubber match.
It looks like a repeat of last year. And I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
I hope the game's better this year than it was last year. That was, that game was,
yeah,
tough to
I mean,
watch.
It seems harsh to just say, yeah, Toronto and Seattle, because, yeah, they are seen as bigger teams. But, you know, you have to give credit to Houston. They have been really tight at the back recently. They have, especially towards the end of the season. They conceded very few goals, but it was like a totally different side turned up to that playoff game the other night, because they looked anything but, you know, secure at the back, which was disappointing. You know, Columbus as well, they've had a great season, and you know, we shouldn't just count themselves and Houston out, but you do have to feel that Toronto and Seattle will be battling it out. And I don't know, I guess Toronto kind of deserve it after the season they've had.
Yeah, I would agree. And they're, for Toronto, they're going to be at their home stadium for the second leg. They're going to be in Seattle for the second leg for the Western Conference Final too. They're in front of their own crowd, comfortable. Toronto just needs to score a goal or win in penalties. Seattle doesn't need to do anything except not lose.
Yeah, and Toronto have done they've done the hard bit. They've gone away without Seb, without Josie, and there was no disaster there. They just need to, you know, take it back to BMO and finish the job. And you just can't help but feel that they will do that.
If you got Toronto and Seattle in the final, this is still a little early, but who would you take in that game?
I think based upon I've actually been lucky to see a lot of both sides this year, and I think on face value you have to back Toronto. They've got answers. If it's 70 minutes and it's 0-0, even if it's 70 minutes and they're 2-0 down, they've got players they can bring on. They've got talent. They've got Giovinco's free kick prowess, which seems to have just suddenly magically appeared this season. You know, I think they've just got enough for me. And the points tally they amassed in the regular season is nothing short of incredible. So I think you'd have to go for Toronto, but don't get me wrong. Like we say, anyone can beat anyone, and Seattle can certainly beat Toronto. So it's not a lumping all your money on Toronto job, but I would I would imagine they might just have enough.
Do you like the one game final, or would you like to see something kind of like Copa Libertadores taking a two leg final to the MLS if you're going to adjust the playoffs at all?
It's a good question. I do like the idea that you leave nothing behind in that final. I think, you know, we see it in these first legs. Toronto will be extremely happy to not have conceded the other night, to you know, to not be losing, and all right, they didn't even have to score. So it tends to kind of take a little bit away from it if you know you have to turn up on that one leg, on that one day, in preferably 90 minutes, and do your job and go for it. I think it makes for a much better spectacle. Maybe the players don't like that so much. It's a lot more pressure, but I think that's what soccer, especially at this level, you know, this is the best of the best. You know, that's what it's all about.
I agree. Brendan, final thoughts?
Not really. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it's been great, guys. It's been really, like you say, I'm sure you say it's interesting to speak to somebody from the UK, but I feel exactly the same. It's great to speak to you guys. You know, especially to hear your views on the Premier League and the Championship. It's been very good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and taking the time. I know that you're doing a show in about an hour or so two. So thanks for taking the time to actually like come and deal with us figuring out a Skype call to make sure that this worked properly.
Yeah, very welcome, guys. It's been great fun. I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye out great. For your podcast that'll be dropping soon, and just look forward to seeing more views on the MLS from across the pond.
Yeah, I guess anyone can profess to be an expert on Twitter about any subject, so I'll keep pretending I know what I'm talking about, and we'll see where we go.
Snake until you make it.
All right, so thank you guys for joining us today on this newest episode of Room Techers. As always, follow us on Twitter at the at Room Temp Show. Botched that. The whole episode was good up until that point. Follow Elliot Holman at Elliot Holman, ELLIOTHOLMAN on Twitter. Check out his MLS UK show or when he goes on there tonight at Total Access. Thanks for listening to us talk to each other. Make sure you follow us, subscribe, download our stuff. Have a great night, guys.
Bye.